Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. My name is Paul Harvey, and I'm looking for answers. What does it mean to be successful? What does it mean to have a good, well-lived life? This podcast is conversations with people that look like they have it sorted. My guest on today's podcast is Victor Jimenez. I first came across Victor through my podcast addiction. I like to go to the gym and I tend to listen to podcasts while I'm there. Listening to his program, I was inspired to get in touch. It was clear that Victor had a busy and varied business life. Success and entrepreneurship came easily to him, but there was more, and you'll notice it when you hear him speak. There is a calm about him. He's grounded. I got the sense that he would have some answers to my life questions and that we would connect well. So during our conversation, you will hear how he started a cycling business that almost went broke and then he turned it around. He'll also tell us about how he creates communities and networks around him and how to recognize and find your passion. And you'll also hear the story of how he walked away from one of the most successful cycling podcasts on iTunes. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Victor Jimenez. Welcome, Victor. I am so pleased you're here with me today. I can now say we're fellow podcasters as my podcast started last week. So I don't feel quite so intimidated about talking to a fellow podcaster, but welcome to Victor. Thanks for taking some time to see me today.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. You know, this is really weird for me because I'm usually on the other end of this process. So it's kind of nice.
That's why I reached out to you, because I thought myself, hang on a minute. This Victor has a story somewhere in there somewhere, and it would be really interesting to turn the tables and see what happened.
Yes, that's kind of fun.
So this is Life, Passion and Business, and this is what inspired me to start doing podcasts. Is that I'm looking, what is it that people have, you know? So what's your story, Victor? How did you get to where you are now?
Wow, that's a huge question.
It is. So we'll break it down to bits, but you know.
how did I get to where I am? You know, it's interesting. So I'm in my mid-50s now, and I think you are as well, Paul.
Yes.
Tell me if I'm off base.
My 55th year.
Yeah. And it's funny. It's something that I've thought about my whole life, is like, where are you and where do you get to? But there's in the last year or so, there's been sort of a few revelations that have sort of come to light in my youth that sort of, I think, shaped a lot of my outlook, you know, going through my career and everything that I've done. And one of the things, when I was in grade school, I had a severe learning disability. I was, 9 years old, something like that, and I couldn't read.
Okay.
And I thought I was stupid. Yeah, you know, at that time, you know, nobody really knew about learning disabilities or anything. And so my mother kind of went to the school and said, you know, my son isn't stupid. You know, there's something going on here. And they got, long story short, is they basically developed a special program for kids with learning disabilities. And I was the first one in the program. And, you know, how did I get to be 9 years old and not knowing how to read? Well, I faked it.
Oh,
you know, maybe I could read a little bit. And I was very kind of creative, and I faked my way through it. and I sort of made it up. But then when I got put on the spot, you know, when you have to stand up in class and read, that was the worst possible thing that I could do, because then I would be exposed, right? And so when I got in this special program, though, I completely flourished. And the reason I think that I flourished in that is because we started the special program, all they did was I had a little more smaller groups, mm-hmm. a little more direct attention from the teacher. Mm-hmm. And guess what? We studied things that we were interested in. And
yeah,
I was really, as a kid, I was really into outdoors. I loved sailing. I was a really good sailor, and I like to play with bicycles and stuff. And I flourished in that type of program. And I think that's, to me, has sort of shaped everything I've done in my life. It's like this huge setback as a kid, I would never want to relive that. And it was a really difficult time. But that sort of shaped me to be A, creative and just figure things out. And, you know, which what I had to do to fake my non-capacity for reading at the time.
Yeah.
And to study things that I was interested in. And it was as simple as that. So every math problem, you know, math and writing and reading and everything was geared towards, I remember we did this long program around sailing and we talked about water and I had to talk about history and all kinds of things. And it was fun. You know, it was a lot of fun. And I think that was one of the big things fundamentally that really shaped me. And I didn't really realize that the depth of that until really very recently.
Has that been a common theme for you now? Is that how you have based most of your life, following that fun? I mean, I would call it passion, possibly.
Yeah. It's sort of that fun. I've come to call it sort of that itch. You know, it's sort of like having an itch that you don't really know. Most of the time we have, you know, people are always asking me like, well, how do you follow your passions? How do you do what you're passionate about? And I'm like, well, I don't really know. All I know is when you have, you know, there's like a little itch, something like, wow, you know, that's interesting. That guy, Paul, he's kind of interesting. I'm going to talk to him. And to me, that's what I've done. And that's like all the businesses that I've had and everything I've done is I kind of wiggle in that space. And a lot of them, you know, maybe, you know, you follow an itch, you know, like, oh, well, I like tea. Tea is interesting. You know, maybe I'll look into that more and talk to some people in the tea business. Maybe I'll get into the tea business. Oh, well, after talking to a few people, maybe I'm not. You know, I like to drink tea, but maybe I'm not so interested in the business side of it. And so it's sort of like following that itch. And I don't know that, for me anyway, is saying that I'm really, you know, saying today, like, oh, there's something new I'm really passionate about. It does happen, but it's more of a process of building into that passion. Usually in the beginning, it's not really as strong as it gets. It's sort of an itch. I'm going to go explore it, and oh, it gets better or not, you know.
So a lot of my listeners won't know of you. So could you give us your career path? Could you just give us a kind of, you know, a broad, well, you know, the helicopter view of your journey, I guess?
Okay. So, you know, basically I worked for, you know, out of school, did a few things, and I worked for a very large high-tech company for 2 years, and I absolutely hated it. I was just a number. Everything I did didn't seem meaningful in any way. It didn't seem like it was hard to tell how I was contributing to anything. And I stayed there for 2 years. I was making, you know, decent money for my age at the time. And I just left. I said, I can't do this. Both of my parents.
What were you doing for them?
I was inspecting microchips.
Okay.
inspecting microchips for computers. And wow. I didn't know what the chips really did. Okay. I knew they went into some servers and stuff like that, but I didn't really know what they did. You know, you look at a chip and I could tell what a defect was, but I didn't know what it really did. So I just left that because, you know, at the time I was interested in some other things. Yeah. And again, these sort of itches, you know, I was interested in, I always liked to take pictures. And I thought, well, maybe I'd like to be a travel photographer. So let me go travel and take pictures. needless, that didn't pan out. But then I went into...
But you traveled for that one, did you?
Yeah, I did the traveling part and I did take pictures, but well, it wasn't, you know, it was an adventure.
I guess you must have had some adventures while you were traveling.
Absolutely, yes. And it was so exciting, you know, it was much more interesting. I didn't have, I blew through any savings that I had fairly quickly. And
you were traveling at a time when this is pre-internet. This is when traveling was a harder deal. And I remember a lot of my friends who did the traveling route in the '80s and nineties, and it was tough. It was a hard thing to do.
Yeah. I kind of vanished from the face of the earth and my parents didn't know where I was for two months.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no mobile phone as such. It's like, hope for the best, you connect with people.
it's true. You know, I used to have to go to the post office and my poor mother. Now I'm a parent and I understand how I tortured my mother. And, you know, I hope my son never does that, you know, disappears like that. But I started a series of businesses, you know, so here, let me give you a few of them. So I traveled a bit and I had various things that I did, mostly in Europe. And I was very interested in racing bicycles and riding bikes and health and fitness. And then I wanted to get into that. And so I met a friend and he was a personal trainer. And I thought, well, I could do that. And so I started a business as a personal trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And I very quickly realized that wasn't something I enjoyed. And so then I started a bicycle store. I didn't really start it. I bought an existing bicycle store and they were asking, I can't remember how much it was, but I offered them 10 cents on the dollar for what they were asking for the business because I didn't have any money. You know, I was a young kid, you know, I was 24, 23, 24.
Okay.
And I offered them 10 cents on the dollar for their inventory and I wasn't going to pay them anything for their business. You know, it was kind of ridiculous, the price. And they said, you know, we like you. And we'll do that.
Wow!
And so I got started in a business for next to nothing, on money that it was only $10,000 that I had borrowed from my grandmother, and I built it up with nothing. I turned a retail bicycle store, from this tiny little store, into a pretty significant retail operation, and then I decided, well, it was the retail aspect after 10 years, it was kind of overwhelming, and at the time I wasn't necessarily the best manager.
Your timing was really good because that was the time when cycling really took off. I mean, all the new materials started to come in, all those new technology in bikes. I imagine you must have been riding a good wave there.
Yeah, and something that's interesting that you just said that made me think is, this might be a nugget for someone, is, so when I decided I was going to buy this store, and I went to every person that I knew that was in business, you know, so I went, my uncle, he was like some sort of consultant for a big car company. So I talked to him and I showed him the books of the business that I was going to buy. And he's like, oh, this is a bad idea. Don't do this. Go get a job somewhere. So, you know, there's a friend of the family that was an attorney, a lawyer for small businesses and stuff. So I went and talked to him and he's like, oh, this is a horrible idea. You don't know anything about the bike business. Don't do this. This is a waste of time and effort. And I went and spoke to an accountant. Accountant said the same. Everybody gave me the same advice. They said, this is a horrible idea. And I said, no. I love cycling. I know how to get people to come to my store. And I did it. I started it. And at the time, in this small town where this was, I didn't live in the town at the time. I lived 60 miles away. So I moved to a new town in a new business. And there wasn't a big cycling community. And very quickly, I sort of helped build or grow the existing community that was there into something significant. And it was all sort of centered around my business. And so it was sort of like my passion of cycling. I was bringing that passion into bringing people into the business, not just like, oh, how am I going to make money? It wasn't about necessarily money. It was like, I love cycling. I want to cycle. I want to hang out with people that like to do what I like to do. And so let's build a community around it. And so I went against the advice of everybody, and I sort of proved them wrong. I'm not any genius in this. It was fairly simple. It's looking back on it, it's sort of like common sense. You know, it's like, well, of course, why wouldn't you do what you want to do?
What is interesting about what you did, of course, is that you built a community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was the community that fed the bicycle shop. You know, it's like that's what social media is supposed to be about. Build a community, and they will, mm-hmm. and you build it. You know, you support your business, and you did it physically with real people.
Yeah, and what's interesting, I'm not sure that it was totally intentional that I'm going to build a community. It was more of, you know, I like to ride my bike. I race bikes, and you know, I just want to hang out with those people.
Mm.
At the time, that's really what it was about. And I guess I'm like, well, I got to get busy. You know, I got to somehow make money and make this business work. And something else about listening to people in that business. So I started out, I knew nothing about retail. So we have all the industry salespeople that come to you and they want you to carry their bike lines or their clothing lines or whatever it is. And they were my consultants. They came into my business and, you know, I asked them, I said, well, you know, what should I carry? What's selling? Yeah, I don't know. And so for the first probably 5 years, that's how I operated my business. I listened to them. They told me what to do. And I got horribly in debt. Everything about the business was going under. I got
right.
It was, you know, I had employees.
They were loading you with inventory then.
Yes, they were, and so I don't know what the trigger was, but something one day, I was going to have to go out of business. You know, I was barely paying my employees. I didn't take any money out of the business at all, and something had to give. And I've read something or something clicked in my head. It's like, okay, why am I listening to these people? They're selling me stuff. Of course they want to sell me more. And I completely changed the way I bought and sold inventory. And I basically started carrying the things that myself and all my employees, what we knew that our customers would buy. And, mm-hmm. and that were profitable for us. Mm-hmm. And in 2 years, we went from on the edge of going out of business to top tier profit per square foot for retail stores, retail bicycle store. Mm-hmm. Just because we stopped listening to everybody else and actually listened to ourselves and what we already really knew. And our customers, they were sort of like family, and we treated them like family. So I had a retail business. I sold that because I was burnt out, and then I moved on to a slew of other related businesses in the cycling industry. I had a distributorship. I had my own bike line for a bit. Been marketing consultant in the bike industry. And of course, podcasting. We had, it's last year we stopped it, but we had a cycling podcast that was extremely popular beyond what I ever could imagine in any podcast. Yeah.
Did you still, is it still existing, your cycling podcast?
It's out there, but we're no longer producing anything.
Okay.
I mean, there's a bank of, I think, 200 or 300 episodes.
And that's a sizable investment, 300 episodes.
Yeah. I mean, we still have something like 30,000 downloads a month, even though we're not even producing it. It's insane.
Wow, that's a nice story to have.
Yeah, and so
have you heard of Daniel Priestley, Key Person of Influence?
No.
There's a book called he's a guy called Daniel Priestley, and the book is called Key Person of Influence, and it's all about creating an asset in the world, and that's what you've done. You know, the cycling podcast is a massive asset for you.
It is, and so. Here's an interesting tidbit, though. So, you know, as you grow in life, your things change. What you're excited about today, you might not be excited about tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's just life. That's just what happens.
Yeah.
And I have, with all my businesses, that's, you know, sort of with the retail business, I kind of got to a point where I was completely burnt out. I still like cycling, but I was completely burnt out on the retail business. So I sold it. I did well when I sold it. And all that type of thing is when I start to get tired of it, I get out of it. You know, I like move on. And I don't always have the answer of the next step, which is an uncomfortable place to be, but I don't always have the answer. Like with the cycling podcast, I think we had sort of run the route, it had run its course for us anyway.
So you say we,
I had a co-host.
Okay.
Yeah, I had a co-host on the podcast.
And so it was a talk together. It was like a duo. You would talk on the show.
Mostly the two of us, but also we often had guests on the show. But it wasn't primarily like this show is you and a guest. And that show, the cycling podcast, was typically the two of us, although we had guests. And we actually, when we very first started out, there were three co-hosts. And then we went down to two. So that's why I said we. And it was sort of my co-host. He was sort of like the moderator, and I was a subject matter expert, and so we would go into, and it was very much how to cycling stuff.
You stopped that because you'd lost interest in it effectively?
Yeah, I lost interest in it. It's not that I don't have interest in cycling. It's just like, well, there's a point when you're like, okay, I'm good. I've done that.
I guess it's a bit like the TV chefs, isn't it? I mean, I don't know what you, I mean, in the UK, we have a lot of TV presented famous chefs, yes, you know? Yes. I mean, you've seen Gordon Ramsay, because he's obviously in the States, you know? But it makes you wonder, you know, like they cook Christmas dinner every single year. And this is the Christmas dinner, you know? And you think to yourself, how do they keep motivated by doing the same thing every year?
Right. And sometimes oftentimes it's worth sticking through some of that. But there's a point where you say to yourself, you know, if it becomes drudgery, can you change it?
How can you bring freshness to it again? That's the point.
That's right. And, you know, it's as you get older, what I've noticed, it's harder and harder to keep that any of those excitements fresh. And so I kind of feel like as we get older, we need to change it up more. Because, you know, you sort of get into routine of life, and it's harder and harder when you're younger, especially in your teenage years and your 20s, kind of everything seems fresh. If that makes sense.
It is.
Yeah, because it is.
I don't know when I've actually had a, I mean, you know, there's nothing you and I mean, no disrespect here, but nothing you and I have spoken about so far I've not heard before from mm-hmm. somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's, I noticed that as I get older, I hear conversations and they're just reruns of other conversations from other people. Yeah. It's very rarely that I hear something fresh.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's... You know, and it's exciting when I discover something new that I didn't hear about. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I remember years ago when someone was explaining to me that there are people in the world that do turkey sexing.
The what?
So there you go. There's a new thing for you. So when you produce turkeys okay. and poultry, you don't want the boys because they cause fights. And so what happens, the chicks get processed.
Oh, and there's the boys experts in this. I have heard this.
And there, are experts who can tell the sex of a chick.
Yeah.
You know, very, very early. And it's like, that's a job.
Apparently, it's a very difficult thing to tell the difference. One wouldn't think, but apparently it is. Yeah, I actually have read about that. Now that you mention it, it's like, gosh, you know, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. People are amazing.
Anyway, look, I digress, and you've given up the cycling podcast. So what did you do? That must have left a huge gap in your weekly itinerary.
It was a huge gap in, it wasn't taking much time. It got to the point we had a routine down. It didn't take a lot of actual time to produce. It was more psychic time, sort of like,
yeah.
It's just taking up energy, dealing with sponsors. You know, the podcast was actually one of the few podcasts I've ever heard of that actually was a profitable business on its own.
Oh, wow.
You know, we had sponsors that were fantastic, and it was just really good. And I had to call the sponsors and tell them, like, look, we're going to stop producing the show. And, you know, you can keep your sponsorship on there, or, you know, you can keep paying us if you want, but you might not want to because we're not going to be producing it anymore. Mm-hmm. And so that was a hard thing to do, you know, to let go of some income there.
Yeah.
And not knowing, yeah, I have other things. I always had other things going on, but still that was a chunk of something that was happening that, you know, to let that go is difficult, and not knowing what's going to replace it.
So was that last year sometime you let that go?
Finally last year. I say finally, because it was three years coming. We had been talking about it, and finally my co-host and I, we were like, you know what? We're just not excited about this. We got to stop. I mean, we're not doing anybody service, not our sponsors, no. Not our listeners, nobody, you know, and, you know, our listeners still liked it, but we weren't doing anybody any favors. And we didn't do an episode and say, oh, that was great. That was amazing. Whereas some of them we would do, and we're like, this is really good stuff. We're helping people here. You know, it was important. It was an important thing.
Yeah. So what did that lead to?
Well, I would say, what is it leading to, maybe?
Okay.
So it freed up some time for me to work on another podcast, which I was already working on, but I haven't put my full force into it. Is called the Flywheel Podcast, and it's actually
that's how I met you.
Yeah, it's very similar to this podcast. It's sort of about passion and business and life and finding meaning and all those questions that I have, and I think what everybody else has too. And it's an interview type show, and so that's one of the things that I've put some effort towards. And I also do small business mentoring, like coaching, mentoring, and I run these mastermind groups, which is basically sort of like mentoring, but it's group mentoring, where a group gets together and they mentor each other in their business or whatever it might be that their challenges are.
And have you been running those for a while, or is that a new thing?
It's new-ish. The way I'm doing it, I've been doing it for a number of years, but most of the stuff that I've done has been in person, and now I'm doing a little bit more of that online. And so we basically, the meetings happen via Zoom typically. So we do it virtually with video. And I'm planning on some physical things too, where we do the same type of thing, but like in a retreat situation where we go, go someplace, and so you get outside of your normal work environment. You go, and nature is always a component because nature is an important thing to me. And you get out there and you work on these issues without all those other distractions. And it's a really powerful way to take a step back from your life and take a different lens on it.
So are these mastermind groups, is it about business mastermind or is it kind of more life driven?
Well, I sell them as business, but to me, there's really not a difference.
No, I was going to say that too, but I thought I'd ask you. Well, that's what I come to realize is that, you know, but so my business and there's my life and my business life. And I think, so how are those different? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're an employee, they can be, but I think as a business person, they're invariably not.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we spend a large portion of our lives working, whether you're working for someone else or, you know, you're doing something, usually it's for money, but sometimes it's not for money. You know, maybe you're growing vegetables or something. And why shouldn't that be something that you enjoy? And why shouldn't you be doing that thing, whatever it is that you're doing for work or to help you survive? Why shouldn't that be with people that you relate to and that you get along with? I still have that question. Why is it that money somehow pollutes us? You know, somehow we say, oh, well, that's just business. You know, I'm not really a jerk like this, but this is business, you know?
Yeah. I do wonder that one as well.
We hear that all the time, you know?
You do. Yes, it's just business. Yeah, I hear that one. Yes. It's interesting that sense of like, what is a definition of success? I'll leave that hanging there. You know, what is the definition? All right, what's the definition of success for you?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think it's that success to me is when I know I'm helping someone in some way. Like I'll give you an example. Like, to me, this is a success and why we had such a hard time stopping the cycling podcast. Every day, you know, with that many listeners, every day we get emails, and you get an email and it shows up and says, hey guys, I really appreciate the podcast. And, you know, I just wanted to let you know, you probably don't realize this, but I got into cycling because my doctor said, you know, I have to lose weight, for instance. And so I started riding bikes and I wanted some motivation. So I searched and I found your podcast, and I've now listened to every single episode. And I have to tell you, you know, you guys helped me. You shared my journey of losing weight and completely changing my life. And, you know, I just want to say thank you. And so that's the kind of thing, like, I know that I don't care about money in that case.
Yeah. No, that's success.
We're changing lives. I mean, we had so many emails like that. And that's why it was so difficult for us to stop, because...
So now there's a context behind why it took you 3 years to stop, because it's really hard in the face of such positive kind of support. You're almost letting your public down, aren't you, by stopping?
Well, you felt that way, but we told them. We said, you know, we feel like we're also letting you down if we keep going. Because we love helping. You know, there's a lot. You can go back and listen to our whole catalog. There's great stuff here.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And every TV show has to end at some point. Yeah. And, you know, and it's better to end on a high rather than end, you know, with viewing figures falling from the floor.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and we were like, you know, it floundered a little bit. You know, it wasn't always positive, and we didn't always get positive feedback. Trust me, it was not always positive like that. But more often than not, it was like that. And so that's the kind of thing. It's like, well, oh my God, my co-host Daryl and I would have conversations. We're like, we got to stop the podcast. I'm burnt out. And like, yeah, but did you see that feedback on Facebook we just got? And did you hear about that guy in Australia? And he started a whole cycling community because we did a couple of shows talking about how to build a community. And he's got this whole town riding bike. We're like, oh my God, we can never stop this podcast.
So what did you do? Did you pull out all the bad reviews and just look at them? Okay, we've got to stop this now. We've got to convince ourselves to stop this thing.
Well, usually, we did some of that too. But so I think to me that's what success is somehow, and sometimes that validation comes in the form of money. It does sometimes. I would be lying if I didn't say that money wasn't important to me. It is.
Well, I think there's that Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah,
isn't there? You have to have the basic things sorted out, and I don't mean the one with the Wi-Fi underneath it all. But you know, you have to have the basics sorted out, and once all those are in place, then you can start looking at the higher things in life, I guess. And at the same time, I guess. But there are people with absolutely nothing who think they have a successful life. And yeah, I know this is why I'm doing this, because I'm still on this journey to try and decide, you know, what, because, you know, for me, you know, life has to be more than just eating, drinking, having children and making money.
Mm. I think, at least for me personally, is relationships are important, and there's science behind that. There's been studies, you know, and there's people talking about, you know, well, you know, when you die, what's important to you? You know, when you're on your deathbed, you're not thinking about, oh, I'm so glad I made millions of dollars. Oh, I'm so glad I got that last gig, that job, or I had 2 million podcast listeners. You know, you're not going to think that. You're going to think of the relationships that you had or that you have.
Yeah.
And that's what matters. When you see people, you know, there's lots of really destitute, poor people living in horrendous conditions that are generally happy. And you got to ask yourself, well, they're living in these horrible conditions. And they're generally happy. Sure, they need money and food and all that, but they're generally happy. So I think, you know, happiness is, and meaning is something outside of money. It's about the relationships and I think helping people, at least for me.
So you take your meaning, your sense of your sense of passion, and you bring it into your work by the sounds of it. And you certainly brought it into the podcast. You certainly brought it into the cycling business because you build a community with it. And by the sounds of it, you're bringing it into the community you're creating around your mastermind groups.
Yeah, exactly. And it's to a lot of people, it's not as sexy to hear about. You know, people want to hear, oh, how are you going to make $1 million? How are you going to make $10,000 next week? That sounds exciting. And, you know, we human beings, we like shiny objects like that. But if we start to dig a little bit, oh, wait a second, okay, I had that $10,000 week last week. Am I any happier? Am I any better off? Maybe, maybe not. You know, when you go, one of the things, when I was 18, I don't know if I've ever shared this on a podcast, maybe I have. When I was 18, I remember my girlfriend and I, and we were sitting one day and we're talking about the future and what we wanted to do. And I said, oh, well, you know, I said, I'm going to make a lot of money, and I'm going to buy a big sailboat, and I'm going to have a Ferrari. I want to buy a Ferrari or a Porsche, you know, some fancy sports car, typical 18-year-old, right? And not that I have made huge amounts of money, but I remember a point in my life when I had enough money to go and buy those things. The first point in my life. And I remember thinking mm-hmm. back on that, my 18-year-old self, and I was like, okay, I don't even want those things now. Those things are like so meaningless. I mean, it sounds cool, you know, okay, I'd love to have a Ferrari and drive around. That would be great. But it's like, so it just doesn't even matter anymore. And I think, you know, that goes back to what I started with, is that flexibility of your passions, your ideas, what your idea today of what your passion is not what your idea tomorrow is going to be. It's something mm-hmm. else. And you have to be able to adapt, and you have to be willing to give up something. You know, in my case, recently, and I've done it multiple times, I gave up this successful business, podcast, hobby, you know, kind of all of that together. I gave it up for not necessarily for something else. It's that wasn't feeding me. And so I'm going to make space for something that is going to feed me. And maybe I'll go back to that. Who knows?
And it's living with that discomfort, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know what? Discomfort, it sucks. It's hard. It's that discomfort is difficult, but I think it's an important thing. You know, human beings, we're not always up. You know, you see happy people, you know, the pictures on social media and stuff, is everybody smiling all the time. Well, I don't know. I'm not smiling all the time. Smile sometimes.
It's interesting there, but this discomfort thing, and it's like, you notice that in parenting, there's all this thing about, you know, young children about preventing boredom. And so, you know, people will go over the top to try and provide, you know, video or games or things that, to try and stop their child being bored. When actual fact, it's the discomfort of boredom is the greatest tool a child will ever have, because it's the motivator to get them to go and do stuff.
Yeah, it's so true. And
if you keep giving them, you know, stimulation so they never get bored, they're constantly looking outside of themselves for stimulation.
Mm. Yeah,
rather than looking within. And I think in adults, that manifests itself in discomfort. So it's really easy to go and, you know, move the discomfort, go and watch, you know, go and binge watch some Netflix or eat or drink or do something else rather than sit in the discomfort and deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult. No, we don't want to face it. We don't want to face those things in our, all those crazy monkey mind in our head. We don't want to face it.
To be very honest with you, this is where I am. I am, you know, I've not shared this with anyone really. This is where I am at a transition point in what I do. You know, I have to make a decision whether to push the marketing agency that I run and make it into a bigger animal that employs people. Or do something else, and I don't have an answer.
Then that's okay, that's okay.
It is okay, but it's bloody uncomfortable.
Bloody uncomfortable. It is so uncomfortable, and it's that discomfort is where the gold is. We find, you know, I told this story about some of the story of the retail bicycle store. Okay. Yeah. And where I struggled in the beginning, and then I got to a point and I was desperate. I'm telling you, I was so desperate. I was letting everybody down in the business. I was going to go out of business. And it was that discomfort that actually gave me the juice to completely change the way I was doing what I was doing. And I'm not saying I want to always, you know, go into discomfort. I don't, you know, I don't like it. You know, here's an example. I recently went with some friends. We went like on a retreat where and a group of us were going, one of the things that we were going to do is we were going rafting, and the water was 41 degrees Fahrenheit in the river. Okay.
So cold.
You could ask my wife or my kid. I am the last person to get into water that's cold. I mean, I hate cold water. It takes me like 45 minutes to jump in the river. It's so cold. So hit 41 degrees is really cold water. Now, we had wetsuits and stuff. And so we get to the river, and there was a place where we had to, you know, the guides, we had rafted down, and then we had to get out of the boats, and then we had to hike up and around because the rapids in that section was too rough. You couldn't go through it. So we got to this section,
yep.
And there's this cliff, and now the guide is there, and he says, well, he goes, normally in the summertime, I would encourage people to jump off the cliff, and you know, you could jump into the river there and it's really nice. But he goes, you know, today's a really cold day and the river is damn cold. And you know, I don't think it's not the best idea to jump off here, but if you want to, I'll, you know, you'll be fine and you can jump off and then get out down there. And I look around at the group, and I could see everybody's like, I don't know. And I was doing the same thing. And I just ran off the cliff, jumped off the cliff into 41 degree water. And as soon as I did that, everybody else went.
Well, of course.
They're like, oh, he's not dead yet. So, and I'm not saying, I am not, and everybody's like, wow, you're so brave. I'm like, no, you have no idea. And it was like, I was feeling I needed to get into that discomfort.
So why did you do it?
I was thinking, I could see that everybody kind of wanted to push themselves, but nobody was ready to take that, get into that discomfort, which it physically was extremely uncomfortable. And they need, I think everybody, maybe it's a little bit of leadership, but it wasn't exactly my intention. I felt like it was something I needed to do, and somebody needed to take that first leap into that.
Yeah.
And everyone
was so elated that they did it afterwards.
Of course. And my wife, I told my wife that I went, and she's like, wait a second, you did not go into a 41 degree. I'm like, no, I have video to prove it. No, I didn't. So that discomfort is, it never feels good by definition.
So this is the place of the entrepreneur, isn't it? The entrepreneur has to deal with discomfort.
Yeah. If you're not dealing with discomfort, you know, the articles you read successful and this, and that's a bunch of crap.
Yes, absolutely. If you're not in discomfort, you ain't doing it right.
And you're not pushing, you're not getting outside of, you're not going to find out what you can do until you get into that comfort zone. If you ever watched, I'm proving my age. You remember Franz Klammer, the skier?
I do actually, yeah. Well, but I do remember. I mean, we're the same age, so I would remember Franz Klammer.
So I would challenge everybody to go and look up Franz Klammer. He's a Olympic skier downhill, and in the Olympics, I don't know what year it was, but I remember he did this run in the Olympics. Perfect timing, actually. The Olympics is coming up, and he did this run, and he was totally, completely out of control. Like 10 times he almost died on this downhill, you know, because he was just let it all out. I mean, he was completely on the edge, and he won the gold because he got completely out of his comfort zone. He was beyond comfort. And it was like watching it was just painful because you're like, oh my God, this guy is just like all out.
Yeah, it's kind of like riding the tiger, isn't it? Holding the tiger's tail, and you just go.
And so, you know, finding a way to get in that discomfort and that uncertainty area, and letting it brew, and it's very difficult to it's difficult to do, but but I think it's necessary, and it's something that gives life a little more fullness, is letting that boredom, mm-hmm. like you were talking about kids, letting that boredom be there. Don't look at your phone. Don't check your social media or your stocks or whatever it is that you check on your phone to fill in the space. You know, you go in the grocery store, and I like to observe people. And when I'm in the grocery store, you see the line of people. And I am occasionally guilty of also checking my phone there. But it's really interesting because mm-hmm. people will stand there usually for 5-10 seconds. And then they kind of get a little agitated and they have to do something. And sometimes people, well, they used to pick up the magazine on the shelf, but now they grab their phone. And I kind of peek over their shoulder and I'm like, well, what are they doing on their phone? And usually they're like flicking through social media, Instagram or whatever, something like that. And there's no space there. There's no like bringing up a conversation with the person in front or behind you in line. There's none of that. And I think technology gets in the way. And so one thing is to try and not let it, because it's designed to be addictive. The technology, it is addictive. It's designed that way. And we need to try and counteract that a little bit, my opinion anyway.
I think we're doing a bit, absolutely. So we've been talking effortlessly for 49 minutes. I look at my timer here and think to myself, wow, that time's gone quickly. And I'm just trying to bring us back or tie this up a bit, really, because it's like, yeah, we can talk on, I appreciate, but it has to be encapsulated in the right sort of size. What is it? I mean, that's you are now at that point of change because you're now involved in the mastermind groups and possibly you're building out. So do you have a sense of where you're going with this, or is it just still unfolding for you?
It's a good question. I knew you were going to ask that. I sense that...
remiss of me not to, really, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is unfolding, and I don't know. And especially at my age, you can't help but when you get into your mid-50s, you know, both of my parents have passed away in the last 5-6 years, and you can't help think that, like, oh, okay, well, now I'm the old one, you know? And what's the rest of my life looking like? And we should think of that all along, but somehow in your mid-50s, it starts to become a lot more urgent. I am not certain where it's going. I'd like to say I'm comfortable with that discomfort, but I'm not very comfortable with it. But I'm not certain. I'm just going where I'm interested, and where I'm interested is bringing people together and having conversations. That's where my passion and interest lies. And combining my other things are being in nature, meditation, mindfulness, all of that. And having conversations around that and helping other people explore those things, people that are interested in that, and helping them explore that, especially how that relates to our work lives and our business, but not exclusively in that area. And
gosh, we're on a similar journey.
So that's where I am. And I don't know what tomorrow brings. And I'm just going with it. You know, money is important, especially now in the United States. So I have to pay for, I don't have to pay, but I choose to pay for my son is going to college soon. And it's a pretty expensive proposition in the United States. You know, a minimum $25,000 a year. And
That's quite a lot.
And you know, so money is important, but that's not my driver. And you know, how can I I want to be able to, when I'm in my deathbed and, you know, my last breath, how can I sit back and say, you know, I've done good. You know, how can I not have a regret there? I don't want to have a I want to be dying and say, oh, I wish I had stayed in that corporate job, or I wish I had pushed that cycling podcast, stuck with it. Yeah, I don't want to have a regret with that.
I'm sure, no, hearing what you say, I don't think you will have any regrets. But let's start to wind this up. So my last question, and I ask this of everybody because I think it's always a very valid question. You know, I've let you run free with this conversation, really, because we have stayed on task as far as I'm concerned. But is there anything that I haven't asked you that I should have done?
Yeah. So the question would be, I think you sort of asked this, is how do you know what your passion is? And I think my answer is you don't, but you do have a sense of what you value, what's important to you, is another way of saying it. And it's not something that what you value is something that, it's not something that you necessarily aspire to. It's observing your own behavior and what's important to you. Like, as an example, for me, I value time alone, walking, hiking in the woods. Okay, that's very important to me. It's something I value. It's not something I aspire to do. Oh, I want to walk in the woods. And some people may aspire to that, and that's fine. But I think that's where my passions are, in the values and those, and also your beliefs are in there as well. Beliefs are something a little bit different, but the values are something really important to continually uncover those and think about, you know, what is important to me in life, you know, and keep following that. And your passions are locked inside those values somewhere. And you don't actually have to name those passions. You don't have to name it. You can, but it might be something that you can't put a name on it, but there's something there. Oh, there's that pull. It's coming. There's something over there. I'm going to go check that out. So
I think there's this thing about allowing ourselves to actually notice them or feel them. Because one of the things for me is I don't allow myself the luxury of going there.
I love it. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I like that.
And it's something I'm having to learn to do. And I don't, you know, and, you know, sometimes I'm successful and sometimes I'm not. So, Victor, thank you so much for taking the time to be with me today. I think we've been talking for 56 minutes and it's been an amazing conversation for me. And I think I could carry on talking to you for probably another 56 minutes if I chose. But I don't think anyone would want to listen to us for 2 hours. So I think it's time to wind it up. So thank you so much for your time today. How can people get in touch with you if they want to know more about Victor Jimenez?
Sure. So two things. I would encourage you to go check out the Flywheel podcast. You can find it in iTunes, wherever you listen to podcasts. Go check it out. There's some fun interviews there about finding meaning, life, compassion, all that kind of stuff. I got some neat stuff coming up. And my website is linked to that. It's victorjimenez.co. You can go there. You can learn about what I do. And there you'll find information on my mastermind groups and all that. And also on Twitter. Actually, I love it. I'm not really on Twitter that much, on social media. I've kind of taken a diet on it. But it's at Victor Jimenez. Hit me up there, say hello, and that's it.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much. As I said, thank you, and I will. I'll keep in touch with you because I think I really, really enjoy our conversation, and I will keep listening to the Flywheel podcast because I thoroughly enjoy your program.
Oh, thank you so much, Paul. This is fantastic. Yeah, same here. We will be having more conversations like this together, I'm sure. And maybe we'll record another one at some point.
Thank you.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Victor Jimenez. I have to say, following my conversation with Victor and others this week, even though I'm relatively new to the podcasting journey and already I'm discovering what amazing opportunity it is, I'm reaching out to people to have conversations and they are saying yes. So please go to the website, subscribe, and you too can be part of this amazing journey. Thank you for listening.